Talk About on Radio Kerry.
Brought to you in association with Kitty O'Shea's Seafood and Grill Restaurant, College Street, Killarney. Join us every Thursday during November for Dine in Killarney. For menu and booking details, visit their Facebook page.
Medical Matters on Talk About. Brought to you in association with the Bon Secours Hospital, Tralee. Celebrating 100 years of advanced medicine and exceptional care.
And Dr. Eamon Shanahan joins us now on the line. Good afternoon to you, Eamon.
Mary, how are you doing?
Very good. You're dealing with medical or general queries today on Medical Matters. So if anyone has a question... Go ahead.
It's AMA. It's AMA. Ask me anything.
Oh, okay. Right, so we'll put the call out there. 0667123666 or text or WhatsApp 0833003300. We have some already, so we will get straight to them. A North Kerry lady in her 80s has a cataract for years. The specialist says it's still small, but she's getting red and black circles. Is it dangerous?
It's not dangerous, but the problem with cataracts is that they gradually mature, is the word they use, over the years. So the situation is that at birth, the lens in our eye is the clearest drop of like dew. It's absolutely transparent. But as we get older, what gradually happens is that the protein in the fluid in the lens of the eye gradually cooks. So it's literally like the white of an egg. It gradually cooks under exposure to ultraviolet light. And it gradually blocks off the ability of light to get through the eye to the back of the eye. So one issue is the cataract. The important thing is that, and the eye specialists will be the ones to speak to about this, they can't do anything about a cataract until it becomes what they call a mature enough. If they try to remove it too early, it's like trying to remove a half raw egg. It's just going to fall to mush. So that's one problem. Separately, however, if the person is having problems with their sight otherwise, or issues with anything else, they really should be talking maybe to their GP, but certainly to their optometrist or optician, because you can get other eye problems in addition to the cataracts, and it may be something completely unrelated.
Okay. A male listener says, I've gotten tonsillitis 7 times since I got COVID in August 2021. I've gone to 2 different doctors on 2 occasions. How do I go about getting them out? They don't say what age they are now.
Okay. The answer is that in Ireland it is the law that you have to be referred by a general practitioner to see a specialist. That's the Medical Council rulings. It is important that you talk to a GP about this, and they will do the referral for you to an ear, nose and throat specialist. Interestingly, the criteria, you meet the criteria for tonsillectomy, 7 episodes in 1 year, 4 episodes in 2 years, or 3 episodes per year for 3 years, I think, are the criteria that I'm reading from the UK guidelines at the moment as an indication of your tonsils removed.
Okay. An 80-year-old lady, recent blood test shows she has a slightly high level of vitamin D. Should she do something about this, or is it okay?
Basically, stop taking a vitamin D supplement. We are seeing people with excessively high levels of vitamin D in the bloodstream, and you can have too much vitamin D. So if you are taking a vitamin D supplement, stop it. I know that people during COVID were taking vitamin D, and there was good reasons for taking vitamin D, but you can have too much of a good thing, and if you're found to have high levels, you'll be told to stop taking the supplement.
Okay. A Tralee lady in her 60s suffers a few aches and pains, nothing serious. Are there any supplements that the doctor would recommend?
No, unfortunately, there's no supplements that we're aware of that are going to make any difference. It goes back to essentially a good lifestyle. So a healthy, balanced diet, don't smoke, drink alcohol in moderation, and try to exercise regularly. They are the keys to trying to keep as fit as possible, and that way keep the aches and pains away.
Okay. A lady has a very hot and burning pain on her shins. They're very uncomfortable. She has rheumatoid arthritis. Now, that's the extent of what she says.
Yeah, I suspect the problem here is that unfortunately, okay, I've often described it as rheumatoid disease rather than rheumatoid arthritis. And what I mean by say by that is that it's the classic what we call autoimmune disease. It's the classic condition where the body's immune system goes wonky and attacks various parts of our body. Now, with the arthritis part of it, it primarily attacks our joints. But unfortunately, a lot of people who suffer from rheumatoid arthritis, and particularly those people who have had rheumatoid arthritis over a long period of time, it attacks other parts of the body as well, including the circulation. Certainly have a chat with your GP about it. If you're attending a rheumatologist, the relevant specialist, you may need to discuss with them. They may need to adjust your medication for your rheumatoid disease to try to control this thing for you.
Okay. A person asks, what foods are good for preventing heart disease?
Okay, again, it's the old cliche, all things in moderation. You see, the point about it is that there are no quote unquote foods you take. Lots of people have attributed various diets to being protective, but this is utterly simplistic in its approach. So, for example, the Inuit have very low rates of heart disease. So, you take a diet rich in cod liver oil and this kind of stuff, you're going to prevent heart disease. No, it doesn't work like that. I think it's important that people have a balanced diet. I mean, one of the difficulties is that, if you like, the affliction of Western society is that we eat too much, and we eat too much of very energy dense foods. So it is about eating in moderation, about eating a balanced diet. Everything that people have been talking about, our dietitian and nutritional colleagues have been talking about for the last 30 years, you know, the food pyramid, that's what you should be eating from. There is not a specific diet that will protect you from heart disease, but you do need to eat and live healthily.
Okay. A female age 75 says, I get uncomfortable pain on the tip of my left shoulder occasionally, especially after eating dinner. I'm 10 and a half stone, cholesterol 5.9. I have 2 good glasses of wine nightly. I take plenty of exercise, yeah. No family history, BP normal, just the shoulder pain only lasts 5 to 10 minutes.
And it's interesting that you're getting it after meals. I suspect that there is probably a bit of reflux going on. So it's an interesting thing that the nerve supply to the diaphragm, it also curiously in some ways mapped onto the shoulders. So the classic one is on the other side, on the right side. Not from time to time, it's said that if somebody has an inflamed gallbladder, they'll feel right shoulder tip pain. If you're getting left shoulder tip pain after eating, it indicates as an indication there's an irritation of the diaphragm on the left-hand side, which you experience in the tip of the shoulder. Now, okay, I don't think there's anything particularly wrong with anything you're doing there, but it may be that you're getting a bit of reflux or a bit of gastritis. I think one really important thing is your weight staying stable? As long as your weight is staying stable, it's probably reasonably okay. There are medications your GP may be able to prescribe for you that might help relieve this thing for you. It's kind of a pink sign rather than a red sign. It's not something I'd be immediately panicking about, but at the same time, it does indicate there's a bit of irritation there, and you'd have to ask yourself, why is that? So it may need to be followed up further.
Okay. Anne says, I am a 59-year-old woman. My dad died a young man. He got a heart attack. I have blacked out a few times and was taken by ambulance to hospital. Blood's taken and CT, nothing shows up. I've been told that the heart muscle takes a while to break down, so having the bloods done on arrival to hospital might not show if I had a heart attack. Is this correct?
No, it's not correct. That's the whole thing, is that if you have serial troponin tests, it's in a matter of hours, not in minutes, but in a matter of hours. And that's the reason why they will do serial blood tests. So they'll do your troponin levels 3 times over the course of, I'm guessing, something like 12 hours. And if there was damage to the heart muscle, it will show up at that stage. Now, you do need cardiology review. Your misfortune is that you've been born with the wrong genes, and you may very well require the appropriate preventive treatment, and you'd be one of the people for whom preventive treatment would be appropriate. But the blood tests are diagnostic. And that's the reason why we get people in the hospital. Your ECG, a blood test, that's how we make a diagnosis of a heart attack.
Okay. A person says, my dad is 82, has had 2 heart attacks. He's active all day long, rarely sits down. He also has a pacemaker. His sister died suddenly of a heart attack, age 70. His other sister has a pacemaker. Am I at risk? I'm 50.
Yeah. Yes, unfortunately, no. Again, it depends on the family history isn't great, is it? And you're one of the people that I think will probably need to have a review, and it's going to be essentially a review by a cardiologist, and they'll do the appropriate screening tests for you and then advise you on what's the most important thing that you can do. Again, you see, the problem is that lifestyle does matter, absolutely, and lifestyle is the most important thing of all, but genes also matter, and it depends on the family inheritance. So if you are of a family where people live into their 90s and no sign of heart disease, it makes things much easier for yourself. But if there is a family history, and it's the direct, I'm not so fussed, I'm not so interested in indirect relatives, and that's the aunts are less relevant here. In fact, they're probably irrelevant here. It's your father is the issue. And so if there is a history like that, yes, you do need to be screened, and you may need to be taking the appropriate medication to try to protect yourself.
Okay. A male caller, age 77, is fit and active, but has noticed his calves are getting stiff when walking. Is there anything he can do?
I think it might be worthwhile having a chat with your GP. A number of relatively simple blood tests would be worthwhile doing. What I'm looking for is that if there anything that might be affecting the circulation, or is there something else going on that might be causing this wasting of the calf muscles. Again, it's not a specific sign of anything in its own right, but it's certainly something I think that would be appropriate to follow up on.
Okay. A male in his 70s from West Kerry asks, is it beneficial for him to go jogging, or should he stay away from it?
My apologies, what age did he say he was?
70s, in his 70s.
Yeah. I mean, moderate exercise is always good. It's interesting in the sense that even relatively small amounts of exercise have been shown to have health benefits, physical and mental. I mean, the thing is that if you are able to jog and can do it without causing yourself excessive distress, well, go for it. You certainly won't be doing yourself any harm. It's where people do mad stuff and exercise themselves excessively. That's the problem. If at any stage it's causing you distress or discomfort, don't do it.
Okay. A female listener, age 68, I'm going to have to spell these ones for you. I'd say it's Sotoger, Sotoger, 80 mils.
Oh, you are?
And
yeah.
Xarelto, 20 mils.
Yeah.
AF and leaking heart valve. Haven't had angiogram in 5 years. Do you think I should ask for one the next visit to the cardiologist? I get tightness in my chest a lot and also reflux.
Okay, fair enough, yeah. I think it's a tightness, just the fact that you've got this condition called atrial fibrillation and that you've got the leaky valve. They're a different problem. They are not directly related to the circulation of the heart itself, and you are taking the appropriate medication for that. But if you are getting tightness in the chest, yes, I think it's worthwhile having a chat with the cardiologist. Now, interestingly, it might be the leaky valve that's causing the tightness in the chest also. So whenever you have your next cardiology review, have a chat with the cardiologist. Just now, just to put a bit of perspective on this thing, angiography is in the main an extremely safe procedure. I want to say that from the outset, but exceptionally rarely, but it does occasionally happen that people can have bad things happen to them during angiography. I wouldn't let it put you off if you have to have an angiogram done, but there is a balance. If we do angiography in every single person, there will be people that will suffer.
Okay.
In your particular case, this is a conversation you need to have with the cardiologist.
Okay. A person in their 20s says, I'm on day 6 of COVID and still testing positive. I've no symptoms and feel
fine. Stop testing. Stop testing.
They're asking, do they need to stay inside?
No, do the 7 days, do the 10 days and stop testing. You see, I'll tell you what the story is that there will be people who will have traces of the virus up their airways for days and weeks afterwards. Follow the HSE guidelines, go to the HSE.ie, look at their COVID guidelines. Typically, you're no longer infectious a week and certainly 10 days after you've contracted COVID. If you test yourself, you will stay positive, but that shouldn't stop you going out. I think what the HSE are currently recommending is that you can go out after 7 days, but wear a mask when you're in the company of anybody else. And by the time you're 10 days out, you should be safe to circulate.
Okay. A woman says, my little boy is 11 months old. He drinks about 20 ounces of formula and is good for solids. However, he won't drink any water. I've tried a bottle and also a few sippy cups. Am I right to be concerned?
Yes and no. I mean, one of the problems is that the formula that your baby is drinking is a food. It's not a fluid. There is fluid in it, obviously, but it's a food. It's laced with calories. And one of the big problems we have is if babies are taking bottles and food, they're going to get fat, right? Simple as. So the thing is that we need to be aware of that. Okay, you got to get devious, and God knows they get cute at, I'd say, probably about 6 months of age, they start getting cute. They're getting cute about these things. So what you do is you get devious, and what you do is don't give them water, but give them something that is water, but with the tiniest drop of a flavouring of some sort into it. And yeah, you say, is that giving them a bad habit? Not really, because you just make sure there's no sugar in it whatsoever. It's a colour, it's a flavour. It gets over their thing about drinking the plain water. Why? Bottom line is, if you're the baby, formula milk is much, much nicer than water. Why the hell would you be drinking water?
Okay. Medical matter.
Matters on Talk About, brought to you in association with the Bon Secours Hospital Tralee, celebrating 100 years of advanced medicine and exceptional care.
And Dr. Eamon is taking your general queries today, 0667123666, or text or WhatsApp 0833003300. Eamon, a female listener in her 30s was on asking, what causes a sty? She says she seems to get one every few weeks.
Okay, so the practicalities of this thing are that along the edge of the eyelid, there are tiny little passageways or ducts, and they are linked back to glands in the upper and lower eyelids. So, again, the marvel of the engineering of the human body, our tear ducts, which are up over the outside of our eyes, produce a fluid, tears that wash across the front of the eye and disappear down a little passageway in the corner of the eyes, and that washes, if like, the front of the eye. However, the thing is that the eyeball itself needs to be waterproofed, and that's what these ducts are doing. They have oil-secreting glands behind them. And if one of those ducts gets blocked up, then there's a buildup of this oil in the gland, which then becomes inflamed and infected, and that's your sty. One of the theories I've heard is that it's kind of dandruff. Now what you get is a fungal infection along the lid of the eye, and that blocks up the duct. One of the things I've seen that a number of my eye specialist colleagues recommend this is just gentle, regular bathing. What you want to do is you want to try and break down the little plugs of oil in the ducts in the eyelids to let the oil come out, which you need anyway to lubricate your eye, and in that way hopefully prevent yourself getting the styes in the first place.
Okay. A Tralee listener who is a healthcare assistant, so has long days on her feet, says, could you ask the doctor, is there anything I can do for a painful bunion? I got a strap in the chemist and I'm taking Vimovo for back pain, but neither of these are helping. Is there anything else I can do?
Yeah, you're probably going to... No, unfortunately, the problem with a bunion, it's a mechanical problem. So lots of people have heard of bunions, but they might be aware of what it is. So very briefly, what the story is, the bunion is a swelling, typically beside the big toe and one foot or both foot. And the essential problem is that the big toe, instead of being lined up directly with the foot, is actually turned out sideways. It's angled out to one side. And what's happening is that... If you like, there's a tendon that runs under the toe out to the tip of the toe. And the problem is that every time you take a step, if the toe is not lined up properly, instead of the toe being pulled backwards, it's pulled backwards and sideways. So the thing is, it constantly pulls the big toe out sideways to the outside. Now, if the big toe is going to the outside, then it's going to force the inside of the foot inwards, in against the shoe or whatever. And for people who are old enough, remember using pens and pencils in school, you used to have a lump in your on your index finger where you're holding the biro. It's exactly the same thing in the foot. You get this lump of bone. The trouble is that if you've got really severe bunions, the only treatment for it is an operation to cut away the excess bone and straighten up the toe. So you probably need to talk to your GP about that. Unfortunately, yes, in the early stages, you can use devices, and the podiatrists, Anne Marie Horgan will be on with Deirdre soon, and she'll advise you about this. But the thing is that you could straighten up the toe to a certain extent in the early stages, but if you've got a well-established, what we call hallux valgus, with the toes really pointed out, unfortunately, the only way you're going to get started is by way of an operation.
Okay. A 41-year-old male listener, should I be worried about stomach cramps?
Yeah, I see. The problem is that that's extremely vague, and unfortunately doesn't give me enough information to be going on, but that's okay. I mean, okay, tummy problems in Western society are nearly all diet-related one way or the other, and it might be that you need to look at your diet to see if you can change your diet. That might relieve your symptoms. What we'll be looking for always are the so-called red flags. If, for example, you are finding the food is getting stuck, you're having difficulty swallowing, if you have persistent pain in your tummy, if there is change in your bowel habits, in other words, if you're going from constipation to diarrhea and back, if you pass any blood or mucus in your stools, if you're losing weight, all of these are what we would consider to be red flags. You need to talk to your GP, and you'll probably be referred on for further investigations.
Okay. Lady in her late 80s has fluid retention in both legs. Legs are extremely swollen, and the left one in particular, severe pain in both legs. Is this common, or is there something else going on?
It's not uncommon, let's put you that way. And the difficulty is there is fluid in the legs, but the problem is not in the legs. Typically, what you're looking at is a difficulty with the circulation generally. There is a buildup of fluid in the system. So if the kidneys are not working properly, the kidneys will interpret that as a dehydration situation and they'll retain fluid in the body. That fluid is going to accumulate in the lowest part of the body, so therefore in the feet. It's complex and it's probably looking at the whole body and the whole health and trying to see what can be done to try to sort out problems in other parts of the body to take away the swelling. Now, obviously, if there are any sort of mechanical restrictions, that's an issue. Sometimes I'll see, very occasionally these, I'll see people wearing catheters and things like that, which literally cut off the blood supply and cause swelling. But that's exceptionally rare and most people will know that themselves anyway. Elevation, getting the feet up can help, but it's not a solution because you can't be spending your time with your, you can't spend all the time with your legs up. You want to keep it as mobile as possible to keep your muscle tone up.
A female in her 70s says the veins in her left foot keep her awake at night with burning and tingling. Is there anything she can do to relieve this?
It's what's the underlying cause of this problem. There certainly is a circulation issue there of some sort, but it could be on what's called the arterial side with the blood coming out of the heart, or coming in the venous side where the vein's coming back or the blood is coming back. It's, you treat the underlying problem and that's how you solve this thing. So you need to have a chat with your GP, see what is it that's going on. Simply it's a question of somebody examining your foot, feeling your foot, is it hot or is it cold? What are your pulses like? Is there good circulation in your feet or not? It's by dealing with the underlying issue you take away the burning.
Okay. A female aged 68 has stiff thighs in the morning. They say that she says she doesn't have arthritis. So what could be causing this?
Yeah, I'd be wondering, the question, it's a rhetorical question, does she have stiff shoulders as well? There is a not uncommon condition called polymyalgia rheumatica. It's a condition where it's characterised by stiffness in the thighs and in the shoulders. A relatively simple blood test your GP can do for you will help to determine whether you have this condition, and then there's treatment for it accordingly. Other than that, it may be just a bit of a rheumatism, but there's, as I said, a simple blood test your GP will be able to do for you about that.
Okay. Trulico wants to know, what does a doctor typically charge for assigning an enduring power of attorney?
And that'll very much depend on the individual doctor, and it's entirely at their discretion. Competition law would prevent us from actually having even a discussion about the subject. So it depends very much on the individual GP and what they feel is appropriate. So unfortunately it's a vague answer, but that's the way it is.
Okay. A North Kerry lady in her 70s has cholesterol of 6.7, LDL 3.9, HDL 1.6, triglycerides is 2.7.
What is the question? The problem is, and I've been going about this for a long time, guys, please don't be hung up in single figures or even four figures in this case. It depends. I said it actually earlier in the program, what's the family history? So start off with your genetic makeup. You know, if you have family that live into their late 90s, it's not a problem. If your family who all die in their 50s, it is a problem. Are you a smoker? Do you have diabetic? Are you hypertensive? Do you have kidney disease? Have you rheumatoid arthritis? Have you taken steroids? Were you on antipsychotic drugs? You know, I mean, there's a lot of other questions that need to be answered before you can put that into context. By itself, please stop quoting me single cholesterol figures, because most of the time, by itself, it's irrelevant.
Okay. A person says, hi, have you any cures for mouth ulcers? I've tried everything over the counter, mouthwash, etc., but get them every week or two. Can hardly eat and it affects my speech due to the pain. All bloods are clear.
Yes. Oh, sore dose. Yeah, I think I'll have the ulcers. It might be worthwhile still talking to a dentist and just make sure there's no malocclusion or something going on in the mouth. Sometimes it can be a manifestation of a dry mouth, but most of the times it's just there. It happens. It's what we call idiopathic, which means they haven't a clue why it happens. The only thing that seems to work is to try to get a small bit of a steroid in close contact with the inflammation that takes. It's an anti-inflammatory, takes the inflammation away. There used to be great stuff called adcartilin orobase, which I believe is available in England but is no longer available in Ireland. Essentially it was cortisone medication in a dental paste, and you could put that on the ulcer and usually clear the ulcer within a day or two. Now it doesn't stop the darn things coming back, but it actually clears them very quickly. I know a couple of my colleagues would use soluble prednisolone tablets, which they instruct the patient to just put very right on top of the ulcer, and again the same thing, try to dissolve it. Now the only thing is you've got to be
be careful because you don't get too much steroids into your system either.
Okay. One kind of similar to one we had a few minutes ago, the top of my thigh goes numb every so often. It's a very strange feeling. I wake in the morning with it numb, but it can happen during the day too for no apparent reason. I'm 60 years old with osteoarthritis on blood pressure meds and antidepressants.
Yeah. Okay, I think probably the key there is the osteoarthritis bit. Where you're getting bits of numbness, what generally happens or what's happening is that you're looking at something that's interfering with the nerve supply to that particular part. And there's lots of things there that could be causing this, unfortunately. I think you'll have to go back and talk to your own GP about that.
Okay. Person asks, are an ECG and a 24-hour blood pressure test a good indicator of a heart condition?
No, I think it's important, and this is really something I need to discuss separately. They are important pieces of information, but by themselves are not the be-all and end-all. The advantage of an ECG is that it gives us a very good indication as to whether or not the person has had heart disease in the past. And it can maybe tell you how you're doing at the moment, but it tends not to have a great predictive value. It doesn't tell you how you're going to get on in the future. The 24-hour blood pressure monitoring is very good for telling or not whether or not you've got blood pressure or not. In fact, it is the definitive way to tell whether or not you've got high blood pressure or not. And if you have high blood pressure, it will put you at risk of heart disease, but it doesn't obviously guarantee you'll get heart disease. So it's an important diagnostic test. By themselves, they're useful diagnostic tools, but they're not the be-all and end-all.
Okay.
Again, it goes back to something we were talking about earlier on. It's the totality. It's how you're doing generally, family history and all that kind of stuff.
Okay. A person says, my husband has, I'm going to mispronounce this, atrial fibrillation.
Atrial fibrillation, yeah.
They ask, would I have to get the kids checked? Is it hereditary?
Good question. Okay, first and foremost, we tend not to worry about atrial fibrillation until people get into their 60s. There are lots of people who have an occasional misbeat. In fact, the vast majority of people have the occasional misbeat. It's something they probably need to think about as they get into later middle age, 50s and 60s and so on. There isn't really a screening test. You can do a thing called a Holter monitor. But even if you find that somebody, a younger person, has an irregular pulse, or indeed if you find somebody has an atrial fibrillation, you're not going to do anything about it because the risks only happen later in life. And there is potentially very serious side effects to the medication. So where somebody is, an older person has atrial fibrillation, absolutely, definitely, on balance, it's better that those person be on the medication for their atrial fibrillation. In younger people, that equation doesn't work, and the risks of the medication outweigh any potential benefit from taking the medication. So the point is, you could look for it, but you're not going to be able to do anything about it anyway.
Okay, we might fit one more in. A 43-year-old female has been having swelling to the hands, as in wedding rings not fitting, as they haven't for some months now, yeah. But also has painful elbow on the left side. Can't recall any injury. Is it wear and tear? Had inflammatory bloods done, and these were normal.
Yeah, I suppose the thing is, if it persists, you probably need to have a chat with a rheumatologist. The reason being that you can get these so-called rheumatoid conditions, which are so-called seronegative, where you won't actually have anything in the blood tests. So it might be worthwhile talking to a rheumatologist about that. Your GP will organise that for you.
Okay. Right, Eamon, we better leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Not all, Mary. Okay, no problem. Take care now. Bye.
Thank you. Dr. Eamon Shanahan there with all your general queries. We got through as many as we could. There were some we didn't manage to get to, but we will hold them over for next time.